All right, let's open our Bibles. Let's continue our studies. The book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 7. We are going to continue from where we stopped. Anytime we start, I'd like to just remind us of the fact that Solomon was looking at life under the sun. This was like a natural man looking at life the way it is. He wasn't trying to be spiritual. He was just trying to be wise. That is, these are the concerns of a wise person. Many people in life, the problem is that they are too foolish to worry about things like this, not because they have faith. And those are the people that Solomon will call fools. He will tell you that they rejoice, that the heart of this fool is in the house of rejoicing. What it means is that they are not concerned about the things of life. They are not concerned about injustice. They are not concerned about the future. They are not concerned about the past. They are not concerned about any other thing more than just be happy. Are you getting my point? That's the problem. Sometimes you might think the people are people of faith, all right? It's not really faith that is propelling them. They are just like children. You know, children don't worry about the future. They don't worry about yesterday. You are getting what I'm trying to say? They don't worry about injustice. They don't worry about anything. But it's not because they are walking by faith. It's because they are too ignorant to know these things should concern anybody. Do you understand my point? Yeah, Solomon was looking at like an adult at life. And for that reason, as a wise man now, he was now having the normal concerns that every wise man will have. If he will see injustice, he will be unhappy about it. All right? He will think about what will happen tomorrow. He will see a man laboring and laboring, and then he will ask himself, what is he going to gain from all this labor? He will see a man jumping up and down, you know, rising up very early in the morning, going to bed late, and he will say, okay, for what purpose is all these things that you are doing? That was what Solomon was doing. He was looking at life. And listen, those questions will come to you at one point in time in life. If you look at those people that he called fools, they are the people that never have those questions. They never have it. You think they are rested. They are not rested. They are too ignorant. Are you getting my point? But a Christian, on the other hand, is somebody who has considered all of these things and have put his or her faith in God. And as a result of that, he's not bothered anymore. Are you getting my point? He has gone through that process of considering, and he's not bothered anymore. All right, a child gets up in the morning. He's not worried about where food will come from. He knows food will come from somewhere. He just knows food is supposed to be there. Are you getting my point? Like one of our brothers, he gave his wife some money. And one of his children said that, Daddy, where did he get all this money from? That's one of the children asked. And the other one said, what do you mean? He got it from the ATM. Do you understand my point? That's a child there. That is, he got it from the ATM. But the older one knew that ATMs don't just come up with money. Somebody has to give you access to the money inside the ATM. And that is what I am asking. How did you get to the place where you could command the ATM to spit out money for you? Are you getting me? You can't. Some people think that you just collect the card. Once you know the PIN and the card, just go there. Punch any amount you like. Are you getting me? To just come out. Now that's a child talking, okay? No understanding what life is about, okay? Now, but then, a child of God may also behave like that. He is not concerned. He's relaxed. He's doing things he's supposed to do. He's not worried about tomorrow. But this time around, it is based on understanding. It is based on the knowledge of the fact that God is the Father. Do you follow me? So it's not as if he's careless, even though he may look like the one that's a child, but this time around, he's operating as a child of God. A child of God is not a lazy or ignorant person. It's somebody who is of faith. The faith is so strong. He or she understands that if I put my things in the hands of the Father, he will always take care of me. Now, so it's not an ignorant person. Faith, I keep on saying it, faith and foolishness can look similar. All right, a man of faith and a man of folly, they may look similar. But the reason, like I say, that there's this proverb I quote all the time, that if you see a man running in the afternoon, all right, the idea is, why is he running? Is that because something is chasing him? Or he's the one chasing something? Okay, so two people may be doing the same things. Is the motivation behind it that differentiates one person from the other? So you see the rest of a child, the rest of a fool. Let's use the one that Solomon is using. The rest of a fool, somebody who doesn't know anything about life. That you see the rest of a faith man, a man of faith and a foolish man. They look the same, but the difference is that the man who is a fool doesn't even have enough understanding to concern himself about anything. But the man that's of faith has enough understanding not to concern himself about anything, knowing that somebody else is taking charge of everything. And one of the signs of faith, let me just drop that before we go back into our reading. One of the signs of faith is that faith has duties. I need to say that. Faith has duties. Faith has duties. That's why James talked about the works of faith. You can only show your faith by your works. You don't show your faith by the fact that you said, I have faith, just with your mouth, by your talk alone, that is the claim to faith. It's by the works. That is, somebody who says, look, I was reading one article that Kenny Hagin wrote, and it was telling a story of a young man who they called, Kenny Hagin went somewhere to go and teach, and they said, please help us talk to this young man. The story is that the man, he has a wife, he has about two or three kids, and he learned a bit of faith, and then for that reason, he doesn't do anything. He sits at home, says, God will take care of me. I believe God, money is coming. He's always claiming and claiming. I mean, the wife will get up, go out, and go and wash clothes for people, iron clothes for people, to bring some money back home so that they can have some money to eat. The church people will gather and help them, you know, take care of the kids, going to school and all of that. When you talk to him, he says what? God will take care of me. So everybody, you know, and then you can't tell him God won't take care of him. Can you say that? You shouldn't say that. Are you the devil? You cannot say to him, God won't take care of him. That is a statement of faith. But one area where you be careful, I mean, something that will help us to balance it well, is that the man has missed the duty of faith. Do you follow my point? Yes, faith has duties. That's how you know whether somebody is walking by faith or is walking by foolishness. What is the duty of faith? I give an example in that man, young man's situation. The duty of faith is that it is wrong for a man to wake up in the morning and it's not a blessing to somebody else's life. Whosoever will not walk, the Bible says what? He should not eat. So if he's a man of faith, he will say, because I'm not walking, I am not going to eat. If he cannot say that, he's not walking by faith. If he's just sitting down there, the wife will go, iron clothes, bring money, bring food, and he will eat. And say, I'm walking by faith. He's not walking by faith. He's walking by what? Foolishness. Those of us that understand faith know that faith doesn't just give you what you want. Sometimes faith gives you what you don't want. You want a job that pays you a huge amount of money. Faith says, good. Now, the job is going to come, but before it comes, I will give you one that pays a small amount of money. If you don't take it, you have missed the duty of faith. Please, I hope you're getting the point here. Faith has what? It has duties. That's how you know somebody who is walking by faith. That man should get up in the morning and say, I know God will take care of me. I shouldn't worry. And having said that, he'll get up and say, okay, now, what is my duty for the day? He will now get up and go and fulfill the duty for that day. He can't stay at home waiting for everybody to be walking. Like the example I've told here before. One of our brothers in school, those I didn't know him then. I knew him later. He was a student on campus. In the morning, everybody would get up and go for lectures. And he'll be laughing at them. And my friend telling me the story, said he used to laugh funny. Oh, Levi said, you people are relying on the arm of flesh. Students in university going for lectures in the morning. One of them said, you are relying on the arm of flesh. That they should see what will happen. He will stay in his hostel. What is in the hostel? I don't even know. Maybe he's playing Christian music. Maybe he's praying. It's possible. There are some kind of crazy prayers. There are prayers of joblessness. You have too much time, so you're always praying. God has answered the portion he wants to answer. So what is your problem? Do you understand? I mean, you prayed it from 8 in the morning to 10. God said, I have heard. Then you repeat it from 10 to 12. God said, I heard it the first time. Then you take a break, 12 to 1. Then 1 to 3, you are praying it again. I heard. It's the same thing. You know what's worrying you now? You have nothing else you are doing. You are not praying. You are jobless. So this young man, I don't know what he used to do in the hostel. But let's make a long story short. Results, exam came, he went for exam. Thank God he remembered to go. He didn't say arm of flesh. He went there, and whatever it is he used failed him. He was saying the arm of flesh will fail the other people, but he was the one that failed. The other people passed consistently. They passed very well. Where did he miss it? Now that's what we Christians must bear it in mind. Where did he miss it? He missed the duties of faith. So he really wasn't walking by faith. That was why James said, you cannot claim to you have faith except it is affecting your works.
How was faith affecting his work? It should have affected his work by his dutiful application of himself, pardon my English again, to the duties of a student. He should have applied himself dutifully. That is, you're a law student, you're a student of whatever you're studying in school, you're a student of sciences, 8 in the morning you have a lecture, a dutiful student to be there by 8. No, just to add to it, I'm going to give lectures the other day to students. Everybody, half of the class stood outside. There was a day I gave a lecture to a class of about 120 people. I gave a lecture to only 10. The rest were standing at the door. Why did I do that to them? I said to them, you live on the premises where the hall is. I had to drive half of the way across town for a lecture by 8:30. I met only 10 people in class. So I locked the door. Actually, I met only 4. 3 arrived with me, and 3 arrived while we were setting up. So I said, where's the rest of the class? They said, they're on their way. They're on their way. So I closed the door. And I gave a lecture in a class of over 100 people. There were only 10 people inside. The rest were behind the window, looking. The bridegroom had come. That is a student. And my argument, I see, happened a few days ago. I went to give a lecture in Parkland. I got to the class. A lot of them were outside. My colleague was inside the classroom. What happened? He said they are just coming. So when I came, they said, sir, can we come in? I said, Laila, you're not coming anywhere. Because in their own case, even worse, because the class, you can see they are hosted from the class. I can stone their windows from the classroom. I said, I don't understand it. You guys have to learn to be responsible. This is what they call irresponsibility. You don't bathe children. You don't do anything. My colleague, I know, he does school run in the morning. They will drop primary school children in school first and then drive to your class and you're not there. I tell them, this is irresponsible. I didn't let them in. Everybody stood outside. I said, well, the only thing I will do is that those of you who are so serious, you can stand at the back and be looking. Now, that just by the way. I said, look, you as a student, you have to be responsible. Those are the duties of a student. 8 o'clock, be in class. They give you assignments, do it. You have a test coming up, prepare for it. It's not arm of flesh. It's called sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Each season has its own assignment in life. Each season has its own assignment in life. Even my little children, as small as they are, when school is in session, they don't watch TV during the week. They are not even tempted. Each season has a duty. Are you getting my point here? So that man, I'm trying to amplify his situation. He was not supposed to sit in his hostel and be telling those who are going to lectures that they are using the arm of flesh. No, those ones are fulfilling the duty of faith. Each season has its own duty. Many people say they are looking for work. God said, listen, better go and find the duty I've given you for now. Let me not sit on that. I'm trying to get something out here. Trying to differentiate between faith and foolishness. That man who was saying, God will take care of me, should have woken up in the morning. Father, I thank you, you will take care of me. Now, what is my duty for today? God will say, you are not setting a good example. Sitting at home, your children have gone to school. Your wife has gone to iron clothes somewhere. Is that a good example? No, he said, you go to the neighbors and cut their grass. Is that the source of your supplies? No, you just set an example of labor for your children, for your wife. You expect her to listen to you. And she's more diligent than you. Does it make sense? And the man will say to the Lord, in effect, no. So God said, now go out. He goes to that church that they are helping his kids. He will say to the pastor, I need to be blessing somebody. What can I do? Pastor will say, okay, what can you do around there? He will say, look at this whole church premises. Who keeps it clean? Who watches over the place? Who is the security man? Why can't I do all of these things in one? Do you follow my point? He's being responsible. But he sat at home and said, the Lord will take care of me. Bear it in mind. I don't want to teach on that now. Faith has what? Duties. It has duties. And that's something we must bear in mind. If we really are walking by faith, that's a test of it. The Lord is good. Now let's continue reading. So I'm looking at Solomon, therefore. Solomon was just looking at life and said, don't be foolish. Look at life. He looked at life with wisdom. And he came to the conclusion that too much staring at life begets another kind of foolishness. That's what he was trying to say. And what is the solution to that? We'll find it later, is divine wisdom. So what this was leading to is the necessity of divine wisdom in life. He was looking at the folly of human wisdom. Human wisdom gets to a point in which it's all foolishness in itself. And if you look at life, late Solomon, like this, this book is actually very easy to understand. Very easy to understand. We stop in verse what? 6 thereabout. Yes. Now we're going to just continue from that. I'm going to read verse 1 of chapter 7 again, then jump down to where we are, because I need to use that one to connect. Now, I said something before, that when we began this, that Solomon at this point was compiling a lot of, say, wisdom, short ones a lot of times, but many times they are actually connected. Please let me remind us, when you are listening, reading this book, be careful to note when Solomon is just observing. Remember that. Bear it in mind, be careful when he's just giving an observation, when he's making statements drawn, the natural man's conclusion from those observations, and then when he has discovered divine wisdom. Those are the three things you must bear in mind. One, Solomon is just observing. Two, sometimes he makes statements out of frustration while looking at those things he has seen, as a natural man would. And our best example of that was when he said, better is the dead than the living, and better than both of them is the one that has never lived. That was a statement of, it was frustration. A natural man looking at injustice in life, looking at the struggles, looking at the things that, I mean, to him, this is wrong. I mean, the oil is in our land is polluted, and we are not getting the oil. Are you getting my point? He gets angry, becomes a militant. That's what happens. I mean, look at it, we were in this land first. These people came because America is supporting them. They have taken the land from us, and they are now building settlements. He gets angry. He becomes a suicide bomber. Those are the people that have made the statements. Better is the dead than the living. That's why they will take a small gun and face an army. And you wonder, are you foolish? He's frustrated. He's not foolish. He has looked at it and said, better is the dead than the living. Now, so Solomon was not saying this is divine wisdom. He says this is the conclusion of mankind when they look at things under the sun. That's their conclusion. Alright? Now let's now continue from there. Verse 1, chapter 7. Solomon said, as a matter of fact, a good name is better than a good ointment. That is, attracts more good. People are turned towards you if you have a good name more than if you had sprayed expensive perfume. And the day of one's death, he says, is better than the day of one's birth. Again, this was an observation. And what he was saying is that during your lifetime, you acquire a good name. So the day of your death is when you have finished acquiring your good name and people are sitting down to critically look over the life that you have lived. We looked at it last time. That was why he said in that verse 2 that it is better to go to the house where a man's death has been attended than to go to the house where somebody has just been born. That's the meaning of verse 2. Better to go to the house of mourning than the house of feasting, because that is the end of every man. He now said in the, I'm just jumping down. Verse 4. We'll look at all of this last week, just trying to revise. The mind of the wise, we all know what the wise is now. The mind of the wise is in the house of mourning, while the mind of fools, those who don't care about anything in life, is in the house of pleasure. It is better, he says, to listen to the rebuke of a wise man than for one to listen to the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorn bushes under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. And this too is futility. Now, we're not continuing from verse 7, so I'm going to slow down here. He said, for oppression, he says, makes a wise man mad, and a bribe corrupts the heart. The end of a matter is better than its beginning. Patience of heart is better than haughtiness of spirit. He says, do not be eager in your heart to be angry, for anger lies in the bosom of fools. Do not say, why is it that the former days were better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask about this. Now, wisdom, he says, along with an inheritance is good and an advantage to those who see the sun. For wisdom is protection, just as money is protection. But the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the lives of its possessors. Consider the work of God, he says, for who is able to straighten that which he has bent? In the day of prosperity, be happy. And in the day of adversity, consider. God has made the one as well as the other, so that man will not discover anything that will come after him. Now let's stop here. All right, I just wanted to read. Let's get a flow of reading, and then we'll now go back, slowly dissect some of the things. Now, it's not every time you need to take it line by line. Many times, I said before, there's something that is connected. Now, I will start with that verse 7. It says, oppression makes a wise man mad, and a bribe corrupts the heart. I think that is easy to understand. But the expression, oppression makes a wise man mad, if you read different translations, you end up hearing and seeing different things. Some of them says extortion turns wise people into fools. Some says will say if you are wise and you are cheating people, your wisdom is foolishness and stuff like that. But if I look at the second portion, which it says a bribe corrupts the heart. Now remember, Solomon was observing life. What he was saying is that he has seen the effect that oppression will have on a man who otherwise should do what is right. What I suspect is this, that when people know what is right to do, and they see the opposite being done. You know what the wise man is now. We've talked about who a wise man is in this context. He wasn't talking about somebody that has divine wisdom. He was talking about somebody, for example, who is educated, who understands what life should be. Do you understand my point? He studied economics. Like we're talking about memory, Bruce, the other day. You know, he looks at the things that are going on, and he gets angry. Why? Because he knows that if we had done it properly, we could get this result. There are times you look and say, this is what Nigeria could do, and the forex market will be stable. This is what Nigeria could do, and the aviation sector will not have any problem. But we are not doing it, so it says that makes the wise man mad. But then the second portion, all right, that's what gives me the understanding of that. It says a bribe corrupts the heart. That is, it is the love of money that makes people do what is wrong. It's the love of money that brings forth oppression. That's the point it was making there. Now, it now says, this is actually connected from verse 1. That's why I went back to it. The end of a matter is better than the beginning. Patience of spirit is better than hardness of spirit. It now says, do not be, now, verses 8 and 9 is the same thing. Do not be eager in your heart to be angry, for anger lies in the bosom of fools. Now, what was Solomon saying here? Please, was observing life again. He was saying that when you see things happening in this life, remember he said, it is better to go to the house of mourning than when things are over. He said at the beginning, when the whole process is over, when we want to review it, it's better to go there and check. We said that at the beginning, that's in verse 2. Then now he's saying that life has a process. Things happen and they take a time to come to completion. We see it in the moment. So he was telling us that when you observe things when it's just starting, it is very easy to get angry where it has not come to an end. Let me give an example. When phones came into Nigeria, that's a GSM, all right? People were very angry. That I remember what they used to say, in Ghana, workmen, you know, like roadside workers, they have these phones. Why is it so expensive? Why is it that it's in Nigeria things will be costing like this? NCC is not doing anything. NCC is Nigeria Communication Commission. The government should regulate this. And everybody, I remember one day, I was with some doctors in UNTH, and the fight was going up and down. After a while, somebody actually looked at me. You know, I can be very opposite to people a lot of times, and it's because of wisdom. And I said to them, what is all this noise about? They have just come. Let them settle. No, why should we be making calls for 15 naira a minute? It is just half, that's almost half a dollar a minute. Where is it in the world that it is done? If you go to America, you pay $20 a month, you make all your calls. Talk. I said, listen. They said, at this rate, how can a poor man afford it? Ha, I was tired. I said, listen to me. If you invested $285 million for your license alone, the poor man is not your first responsibility. He's not your first worry. As all of you talking, if you are the ones that invested that money, you won't talk like this. No, they were talking, I got tired. I said, they have just come. Let them settle. You and I know that right now, the costs are less than, in cost, less than 5% price-wise of what they used to be. Yeah, because if you make adjustment for inflation, if you price it in dollars, they are less than 2% of what they used to be. It was 15 naira a minute when dollar was like 100 naira to the dollar. Can you remember that? Right now, at over 400 naira, is still going for like 6 to 7 naira a minute. That tells you that the price has so come down. What does that tell you? I was right, they were wrong. I told them, I said, just be patient. This thing just started last year. What is all of this noise? I look at the cut. Look, when Glo came out, I was giving out SIM cards, 1 naira. Right now, SIM cards are free, essentially. Are they not free? Are they free? In fact, with bonus, thank you. Not only is it free, with some bribe inside. Say, buy this one. I was right. They were wrong. You see the point I'm making? That is, better is the end of a matter than the beginning. So that was why Solomon said, having observed life, he said, people get angry too quickly. Buhari comes into power 6 months later. Power is not constant. And they say, is this the change we voted for? The man has been in power for 6 months. They start fighting. Change, if they call election after 6 months in any country, the government will change every 6 months. Why? People get angry quickly. So that was what Solomon was saying. He said, the end of a matter is better than its beginning. For that reason, he says, patience of spirit is what you need. Don't make quick judgment. That's what he meant by haughtiness of spirit. This was observation of life. Then he made a statement. He said, for that reason, don't be quick to get angry. Something happens, relax. Like we say, cool your temper. Wait for a while. See where the conclusion of the matter is before you start getting angry. Before you start making judgment. Remember, Solomon was not saying this by revelation. He was saying it by how? Observation. That is, if you live long enough, you will see that that's how life should be. Somebody reports a statement to you. We'll get that to that later. He said that, yes. Next question, what did he mean? Somebody said, didn't you hear what he said? No. What did he mean? That is, you're not, with age, you just know that you don't react to the first statement. You wait till people you have heard the whole thing. Why did he say it? What was he thinking about? Did he realize he was talking about me? Okay, let's ask him. And they don't realize why you have not joined them to go and fight. The simple reason is that you have learned that the end of a matter is better than its beginning. That let's reset this matter to the end before we apportion blame. For that reason, he said, anger lies in the bosoms of fools. There's one statement you must understand here. Solomon was not just saying that foolish people, this man is a fool, he will get angry. No. What he was trying to say is this. When people don't understand these things, they get angry quickly. When you read Solomon speaking, when you use the word fools a lot of times, he's talking about ignorant people. That's what he was talking about. So when he says, anger lies in the bosom of fools, what it means is simple. When you are in a student union government, campus, most of them are what? I didn't say it. Who said it? Solomon. When is this? No, SUG. 90% of their riots of what? Fools. They don't know what they are rioting about. Students are the quickest to make judgment. Just to disagree with authority. I told the story once when I was in camp. There was one Aluta boy hooking for NYSC. You know what they call Aluta? I don't know whether it's federal government, whichever, they release money that the last day of camp we should do campfire with goats, we'll do suya in other hand. So now they go buy goats, come on. We knew the amount of money that was released. It was supposed to buy like 5 or 10 goats, I can't remember. Then the goats arrived in camp. And where we were, we heard there was riot going on near the gates, the demonstration. So we went there. What is it? We're demonstrating that the goats were too small. That why would the goats be this size? You know the conclusion of young people, in fact, not young, most human beings, they have eaten the money. Federal government released, let us assume today now, 10,000 naira per goat. Look at the goats. These are not goats of 10,000. Most of those boys have never bought a goat in their lives. So, we had one very wise camp commandant, one army captain. So he came out, asked what happened. They told him. Of course, you know, they don't handle all those sides of the things, all this money, food. They only to drill you, make everybody in line and all of that. So he came out and said, all right, he has heard. So what are we going to do? let us keep the goats here. We'll now send a delegation to the market to go and investigate the price of goats. And then they will return. And let's see what happens. And of course, everybody said, no, we no go gree, oh, we no go gree. We want bigger goats, we no go gree. So finally, that little boy who was in front making all the noise, they called him closer. I was close at that time. The camp commandant spoke with this guy and explained to him. So the boy turned around. Great campite, whatever, hey. Great campite, hey. Great. You know what we're going to do? No. This is what we're going to do? Yes. We will send a delegation? Yes. They will go to the market? Yes. They will go and investigate the price of goats? Yes. And they will come back and report to us. Hey! I remember very well because he repeated almost word for word. I'm telling you, I remember very well. Almost word for word what the captain said, the camp commandant. And of course, everybody followed. When you see students gather like that, usually it's a riot of what? Fools. That's a matter of fact. If you're a student here, I wasn't thinking about you, all right? But anyway, that's why you are here. You will take wisdom back there. Amen. You understand? You will take wisdom back there and go and tell them, look, things are not always like this. It was a day, just to tell a few stories about students. When I was resident in Luth, a student died. I don't know what happened to him, but his body was in our mortuary, so one day they came. So when they came to pick the corpse, they were taking it home for burial and all of that. No students everywhere. And I was hearing noise outside, fight, no quarrel was started. So I came out of the residence room. Called one of the boys, what's going on? He said, look, one small issue, I still remember him. They better release that body now, otherwise we'll show them student power. You will show student power. I was looking at him. You know, the attack is just like, boy, kneel down here, put up your two hands and face the wall. What was the cause of the quarrel? The morgue attendant said, listen, there was a case that had to do with either somebody was, maybe there was a fight or something. But the death was something to be investigated and that the autopsy had not been conducted. And it was to be done that morning. So they came early and they told them simply, you will have to wait until the autopsy is over, everything is signed. And of course, typical students, no, we no go agree. We want the body now. Now, now, now. The body will come out. That's when I just walked in. So I saw the boy was making, I said, wait, come. Somebody killed this boy. Yes, I think so. They said yes. I said, how will you like it if the case goes to court tomorrow in 6 months' time? And they said that the boy didn't die because somebody shot him or something, but that he was running, he had a heart attack, and he fell down and died. I said, listen, at that time it's court, you won't be there. It is evidence they will be dealing with. The boy paused, was looking at me. I said, when somebody dies, the only evidence of the cause of death is the autopsy report. You can have your corpse without an autopsy report, but don't make any noise when everybody goes court-free for the death of this boy. Hey, calm down. Great student, here. You know what we're going to do? He went outside to go and calm his colleagues down. Why? Because of what? Knowledge. Wisdom, thank you. A little bit of wisdom. Suddenly, the boy was no longer a fool. So the boy... No, what Solomon was saying, very practical. He said, so you see, anger lies where? In the bosom of fools. When people don't know anything, they make a lot of noise. I always talk about this power sector problem in Nigeria. Nobody, since I was young, we've been crying for constant power supply. Then, our current head of state became president. He appointed the action governor as his power minister. Baba Tunde Fashola. Fashola said, you want constant power? We all said yes. He said, you have to pay for it. We said, no, lie. We are not paying. NLC went on strike so that they will not hike the price of power. And I said to myself, anger lies in the bosom of fools. And this man said it clearly on TV. You want constant power, you will pay. The longer you resist the hike in price, the longer the days of constant power supply before it arrives. Why? Because it costs money. I remember what he said that day on TV, and I was impressed by it. He said it needs massive investment. Massive investments are funded by banks. Banks don't give you money until they see a clear pathway for repayment. Three banks gathered the other day that they want to take over IT Salat. Remember that? Yes. The man said, listen, these things are funded by banks. So if you want it, you have to pay for it. The banks have to check what we are charging. If they look at our tariff, they say, this cannot pay our loans back. They won't give us money. And NLC didn't leave the road, though. They still blocked, is it Alausa? Blocked a code DC. Saying, lie, you can't hike the prices. That was what Solomon was saying. That be patient, that the patient of spirit is better than the man who is haughty of spirit. That is, before he starts rioting and making noise, he settles down and gets all the information available. That converts him from being what? A fool to a wise person. So he said, anger, that's what he meant, lies in the bosom of fools. That those who are wise, they are patient to see the end of the matter. So verses 8 and 9, you can see they are connected. In a similar way, he was saying, verse 10, do not say, why is it that the former days were better than these? That when you speak like that, it's not because you have knowledge. It is because you are ignorant. Do you understand that? Yes, that's what he was saying. I can't go into more details than that, but we can just take that. Many times we are speaking, people keep on telling you, those days. And there's been those days every day that I've been living. That is, today now will become those days in 10 years' time. Yet we are not occupied with Thanksgiving for today. I remember those days, I was talking to one of our friends here. He said, when he first came to Enugu, how much was land in New Haven? If he had known, he would have bought all the land in New Haven. But now, he said, how much was land that time? That they offered him land here, 100,000 naira, 50,000 naira. But at that time, he was speaking, you couldn't get that land for 10 million. He said, look at it. So I turned to him, I said, Oga, what you have said is very true. But right now, there's land that's going for 50,000, which in 15, 20 years' time will also be going for 10 million. So if you really believe what you are saying, go and look for those ones and put your money there now. And you know, it happens all the time. After I said that, you know, near that Goshen area, was going for 300,000. Between there and the road, 300, 500, 300, 500. As of last year, you couldn't get the standard plot there for 20 million. That is, nobody, the ones close to the road, nobody will give you for 20 million. 20 million is for the ones that are behind Goshen. Are you getting my point? That parallel to Goshen. That's last year. So, you see, some people start telling you a story that those days, he said this, today with those days, another day. So those are the kind of things Solomon was saying. He has seen people talk a lot. He says, look, when you talk like that, you're not talking out of wisdom. You're talking out of ignorance. So Solomon was being practical. That's the point we are making. Next point, wisdom, he says, along with an inheritance is good and an advantage to those who see the sun. For wisdom is protection, just as money is protection. Money does things for you, so you can get the same results with wisdom. But the advantage of knowledge, you see that he ties knowledge and wisdom. The advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the lives of its possessors. Two things here. Number one, you see, when we're talking about wisdom here, it's people who have understanding, those who have knowledge and who are applying it. And in fact, if you read New Living Translation, doesn't even bother putting the word knowledge inside there. It just says wisdom and money can get you almost anything, but only wisdom can save your life. But literally, it says the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the lives of its possessors. That is, wisdom is when somebody has knowledge, like we have been talking about. And it says that again, I don't want to sit down and explain each of these things. Some of them are just clear. They are easy. They are straightforward. Money can do things for you. Anything that wisdom, money can do for you. Actually, if you have good understanding, if you have good knowledge, you can get the same results without having as much money. And I don't want to start telling stories about my life, you know, here. There are many times in life. In fact, having too much money sometimes does not allow your wisdom to develop. That has been my experience. Having too much money, you just throw money as things. I like one thing Damon John said to it when I was watching him in Shark Tank. He said, money doesn't solve your problems. It only drives you towards them in a Bugatti. That it doesn't solve your problem. It just drives you towards the problems in a Bugatti. And that's a matter of fact. When people have too much money, they invest recklessly. You understand? They are not critical in the appraisal of things. When they have too much money, they invest recklessly. Why? The money is plenty. But what was Solomon saying? It is better. He said, wisdom, gathering knowledge before you spend money, he said, not only helps you, it might be the thing that will save your life. Money does not save your life, he was saying. Let's not sit on that. Verse 13, consider the work of God, for who is able to straighten what he has bent? We read this earlier. Solomon was just telling us, in effect, God has said things in a particular order. And now, this is important. We're going to get back to it. He said, God has set things in a particular order, and we must learn that order. We cannot subvert it. Now, he now said in verse 14, which was where we stopped reading earlier, in the day of prosperity, be happy. But in the day of adversity, consider. He said, God has made the one as well as the other, so that man will not discover anything that will be after him. Again, self-explanatory. Two seasons will come in your life. One season will not be as prosperous as the other. The reason why God gave the days of adversity is for people to be able to introspect. Can I get practical a bit? You know, when Naira, you know, a few years ago, Naira was 150 Naira to the dollar, just about 3 years ago, okay? Not more than 3 years, but okay, 4 years thereabout, right? About 3 years ago. Yes, 3 years, 150. And then, of course, it went down. It crossed 500 until the intervention by Central Bank over the last 2 weeks thereabout, and I pushed it back down again. Still hanging around. What is it now? For something, right? Okay, so good. So we agree something around 400. Okay, good, fine. But let's just take 400 to make it easy to discuss. So the thing has really come down over the last 2 years. Now, you know, for me, I didn't worry for one day. Amen? Not one day. Not one day. I laughed. I laughed by faith. I laughed by everything. I laughed from wisdom. I laughed from understanding. If I laughed, I said, if I really believe God, this is proof that I believe him. Even if I didn't feel like laughing, I have to laugh. I have to laugh. I just have to laugh. I have to make myself happy. Because I have to prove to the Lord that I believe him. Now, I'm going somewhere. But you know, that was when Nigerians actually sat down and realized the foolishness we have been practicing for a very long time. We have been very, very foolish. Everything had to come from abroad, including, you know, one of my staff the other day took permission that she wanted to travel because she was not feeling well to where? India. For what? And doctors, I said, who referred you? Nothing. Nobody referred her. So, but the family gathered and decided that she was sick and she had to go to India. That is a problem when you can easily buy Forex. And Indians were collecting between $500 million and $1 billion from us annually. Medical tourism. There were companies in Lagos, that's the job they do. I think they are still there, all right? That's the job they do. They are there. Many of those things for nothing. She went. Came back after like 6 weeks. What did they find out? They said there was nothing wrong with me. Nothing. About 1.5 million naira had died in that process. The question I asked simply was, who referred you? And there was no answer, because that shows you that no doctor in Nigeria felt the trip was necessary. Because when it comes to referring people abroad, especially if I refer somebody to Europe and America, that one, you don't want to spoil your reputation. You know, Uboma is very funny. Once they key your name into the system that you're a useless doctor, even you, when you come for visa, they won't give you. So normally, my colleagues are very careful. One day, one of my colleagues took a phone call. He said, I should deliver him. And this person is always calling. The fellow was actually sick. Wanted a referral note to go to the US or to Europe. I think to England. Somewhere, sir, go abroad. And he declined to give the note. And you're like, why not? He has his right. He said, he can go anywhere he likes. He said, but when you are referring somebody to go abroad for treatment, it has to be demonstrated to the American embassy or UK embassy that you can't do it locally. And that he said, I can't lie. What is wrong with this man? This is the standard treatment everywhere in the world. It's a bad disease, I know. But this is the standard treatment. I'm a specialist. I know his treatment. This is the standard treatment anywhere in the world. That there's nothing I can put in the referral note for the reason why he will go abroad. That I can write him a summary of his case any day. But it's been impossible to find an excuse inside. Because normally the doctor will say, okay, you need to go and do this procedure. It's not available locally. We need to get this person a bone marrow, a stem cell transplant. It's not really done. There's only one or two places that tried it in Nigeria. They do it off and on. So that one they will understand. But to tell a man that has severe malaria that he should get referral notes to America. You know, I'm giving as an example. So the doctor said, look, what am I... And the person had been pressurizing him. He said, this man wants me to lie. I can't. Now, why am I talking about it? We were doing all of those things. Why? Forex was cheap. Then finally, when the thing became, of course, like I told you, many of my colleagues, me, small guy like me, many of my colleagues, children in America, going to university. You know, from small money they make here and there, sent 2-3 children to go to school in the U.S. What are they going to do? These boys are 16, 17, 15, and you go to university. Now, those are the most foolish things you can do for your children. They are some of the most foolish things you can do for your kids. You cannot tempt me with a free, fully funded, you know, scholarship to Harvard and for me to send Akindu there. I won't. And he knows. So he won't even come home to come and tell me. One in their school, they said they are doing Cambridge. I said, are you going to Cambridge? Everybody's doing. I said, you do SSC and NECO. Oh, no. Yes, so forget that matter. The boy went back to school, told his guys, man, do you know my father? He doesn't believe. Doesn't believe in all of these things. So. Now, really, that was the time people started, people were withdrawing their children from school. Where will you get the money from? When school fees doubled overnight. Expenses tripled overnight. That was what Solomon said. He said, in the time of adversity, affliction, what do? You consider. We sat in Nigeria and realized how foolish we have been. Importing simple things like toothpick. Going to check why you are sneezing in India. There's only we woke up to reality. That, believe me, for first degree, there is nothing. Let me tell you the truth. Let's just talk here. I work in university. For first degree, there is nothing your children are gaining from abroad that they can't get locally. Nothing. What did I say? No, you didn't say it well enough.
Nothing.
By the time your children go to Covenant, go to Babcock, go to, where's that place in Yola? American University of Egypt. When they go to those private universities, for most courses that those guys offer, there is nothing they are getting abroad. The only thing they have abroad that you can easily get here is fast internet, because there's nothing they are teaching that is not on the web. Nothing. It doesn't reach anyone. Many of these 4G broadband companies that are all over Nigeria now. There is nothing. That money used to buy the Chappie laptop and get him broadband internet. There is nothing. And believe me, for many courses, like Bishop now, you want to be an architect, you UNEC will teach anything you are going to teach in America. And I'm not joking. The UNEC here, they will teach that to you. Am I lying? Even if I'm lying, will you tell me I'm lying from you? But believe me, matter of fact, matter, Sha. At least I teach medicine, all right? Go to some of our, I can recommend universities where you can study medicine in Nigeria. By the time you graduate, you are as good for a first degree. In fact, for first degree, you are better than the guys trained abroad. That one is for sure. Because they will train you to use your brain. Those guys train to use machine. Yeah, we say, look, but there's no machine. So this is your brain. You sharpen it. We file it for you. Your head will be pointed by the time you leave school. File it. Yes, I'm serious. There are many decisions we make with head. I said, Oyinboma won't date. Because like my friend in America says, every cottage hospital has an MRI machine. Every single, it's a rule. Every cottage hospital in America has an MRI machine. But I can tell you all the addresses of MRI machines in Nigeria. In the time of adversity, what do?
Consider.
Believe me, this last one we had in Nigeria was good for us. You know what's paining me? No, it's not paining me, the matter of fact. It will end soon. I'm hoping people have learned their lessons. All our bad habits, we have to pray it. We need a government that time that will make laws and enforce it. We tell you tax on international flight is 200%. If you buy the flight for $1,000, you pay government $2,000. Where are you going to? We need it. All this one that small people just carry their wife, their children, and say, we are going to Dubai for the weekend. Some of the most foolish things we did. Dubai was getting rich at our expense. Eh? Everybody, in fact, if I ever become head of state, pilgrimage in Nigeria. The tax we make you lose faith. When I finish taxing you, despite these Christians, in fact, I'll leave the Muslims alone. Those ones, they say that. Even Muslims, I'll look for on El-Rufai as my vice president. Now I go announce the Muslim tax. No, it's El-Rufai that became governor, warned everybody, if you want to go to Mecca, you're on your own. This government will not give you 50 kobo. Because they've read the Quran says if you can afford it. So why should the government help you afford it? The ones that get on my nerves are these jokers that call themselves Christians. Now we come, say they are going to Holy Land. Let me not start. Suppose you know when I start, it's hard. Let me leave it there. If I become president, for going to Holy Land, your tax is 200% on the flight ticket. Then anything you bring back from there, any relic, any sand you bring from the Jordan, anything, oil, every bottle of oil is $1,000 tax. Import duty from Jerusalem to Nigeria. After that, all of you will go to the Moladi Mountain. You will go to Jerusalem. I'm telling you, rubbish. Just be exporting our money to where the people don't believe in our Jesus. Can you imagine that kind of thing? Those people just come and say they have come again. What are they? Nigerian Christians. What are they looking for? Say, that joker, that carpenter. Yeah. What are they looking for? Said, there's one guy. Remember that guy that pilot hung for us? Yes. And they're looking for his where he came. Say, where's his grave? Do we know? Dig one for them. Say, this was where he rose. Yeah? If you want, they will... It's your tourist dollars now. What are you talking about? One day I finished preaching here like this. One brother brought two pictures of me. He said, two different upper rooms. A few years ago here, he said, Oga, I will bring you photo. Upper room. It depends on who's carrying you there. One tourist comes and says, you want upper room of Jesus? Follow me. So swear your Jesus. You now come with, one day my sister called me that. What do I think of, what's the name of that seed? Mustard seed. I said, which one be that one? That they brought it from Jerusalem. I think it's small like this. When she told me the price. Ah! Okay, what is it supposed to do for you? Because Jesus said, if your faith is like what? So just collect one and use to measure your faith. That's not good enough. The Lord is good. Oh God, let me not spend time on that. In the time of adversity, what do? You consider. Thank God for the adversity we have had. We have considered. All our teenagers are back home. Being taught the will of God by their parents in local universities. Amen. I beg the apostle came with the wage verse. Is that one, Joe? 14, yes. In the day of adversity, he says, consider. God indeed has made the one as well as the other. All right. Now, let's now go down to verse 15. Just wanted to end that one there. Next point now. Now, please, this is very important. I need to explain it. Let's hope I can get. I really wanted to move fast, and I will. Verse 15. I have seen everything during my lifetime of futility. That is waiting, like we say in Nigerian English, waiting my eye never see. That was what he said there. All right? There is a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs his life in his wickedness. Now, he said, do not, now listen to this. This is not the conclusion he came to from observing that. Do not be excessively righteous and do not be overly wise. He said, why should you ruin yourself? He said, do not be excessively wicked and do not be a fool. That is, don't go around with empty heads. Why should you die before your time? What was he saying? If you're excessively righteous, Solomon was saying from observation, not the word of God, that the likelihood is that you will ruin yourself. That do not be excessively wicked. Do not be a fool. Ignorance will make you die before your time. Remember, wisdom preserves the life of those that have it. All right? In answer, this is my own another conclusion. It is good that you grasp one thing and also not let go of the other. For the one who fears God comes forth with both of them. Shall I read this one? Okay, let's explain this before we go to the next one. Now, please, note what Solomon was saying here. Again, don't ever forget, these are what? Observations. And many of the conclusions are derived from the observations. What was he saying? I have seen a man who's righteous, and then in his righteousness, despite the fact that he was righteous, he perished. He died. He lost money. His business collapsed. Yet I have seen another man also who, despite the fact that, oh boy, the man was not straight at all, he lived long, you understand? And then he prospered. So Solomon says that for that reason, I'm thinking, now notice, I'm thinking, don't be too righteous. This righteousness does not always pay. And that case, in the same manner, don't be too wicked. You will go to prison. So what do? Just try and balance your righteousness and your wickedness. I like the way you are laughing. That is that guy a man of God? No, you don't think so. He wasn't born again. This was why people said that the man wrote this book in a backsliding state. Because he didn't understand what he was saying. But it's easy to understand if you follow what I've been saying. It was an observation. And this is the reasonable conclusion from the observation. What do you call righteousness? Let's say it. Don't give bribe. Police stops you on the road. You say, my paper is complete. I'm not giving you anything. Are you getting what you mean by righteous? That's what he calls, you have been too righteous. So. What did he ask you for? 200. Give these two guys 200 naira. Go home now. That's what he was saying. He was saying, listen, this being too righteous, it doesn't seem to work in this country. He said, you won't give bribe. You won't inflate your quotation. I have seen a guy who did not inflate his quotation. Right now, he can't. In fact, they just drove his children from school last week. That's what Solomon was saying. Yeah, there's no one guy. He goes to church, he's a deacon. But he's very, very smart. He gives to Caesar what belongs to Caesar and gives to God what belongs to God. And he's making money. If I ever know one, he doesn't even go to church. When he wants to bid, he goes to the MD. What's your cut? MD says 10%. All right? He goes to the other people. How much? All these account people. You people say, you're not throw too long ago. MD is collecting only 10%. Too. They say, you know, we are many. MD is only one now. We are, you know, how many of us day here? How much? Put 15 for us. Okay, fine. And he reasons to himself, if I give the two of you 25%, me, I put 25 for myself. Apart from my normal profit. This gate made everybody add 10%. By the time he's done, the contract is up by 100%. He will get it. MD is getting his portion. And he go, when he comes to church, he gives a tithe. And his life is never tight again. And the pastor makes it clear. This is one of the faithful people in this church. Anytime you call upon him, beyond it, there's no month I don't see his tithe. And he comes to my house regularly. And in church, when we ask for special offering, he's there. That's what Solomon was saying. I've seen a wicked man prosper in his wickedness. And you say, yeah, God will soon punish him. No, at the age of 89, you came for his birthday. Okay. What is the conclusion? Believe me, there's none. That is, this is just a matter of fact. Now, so life be. So you are not the first to see it, say it, and observe it. Solomon said, I have seen it too. I've seen people who did right. Nothing came out of it. Their children were angry. They stopped going to church. So what is it? Say, if you don't believe, you will go to hell. Say, I'm already in hell. Forget that thing. Don't threaten me with any hellfire. Say, now, so my father do. And so we take suffer anyhow. I mean, you've seen it before. These are real things. Look, this book, one of the best books in the Bible, the guy was given to you straight. Let's not deceive ourselves. This Christianity does not always pay. Yeah, that's what he was saying. All these righteous men, righteous and righteous men. People don't righteous before you, they're dead. He said, when you get to heaven, there's judgment. He said, you don't reach there before. Honestly, the Lord is good. No, really. That's what Solomon was saying. And what is the lesson for us Christians? Let me just say, I'm not going to say much about it, more than the fact that Solomon was saying those effects. Listen. First, if you're expecting to do righteousness for what it will bring, forget it. It's not promising you anything. If you're looking for results, you can go the way of wickedness. That's your problem. He wasn't offering any comfort. I want you to understand something here. Solomon was not here offering any comfort. He was just saying, this is what I have observed. Many people do righteousness, it doesn't pay them. The things they are looking for, they pursue the way of righteousness, they did not get it. I have seen people breaking the laws left, right, and center. At the end of the day, they are the multi-millionaires. They are the big men. They are the big boys. For Christians, you know what it means? Make up your mind which one you want. He said, I was looking what? Under the sun. But like I said at the beginning, we Christians, we can go above that level and see what God is saying. What was Solomon saying in effect? Listen, under the sun, this is how life is. But we believers understand that we make up our minds. Do we love righteousness? Or we don't love righteousness? That's all. And that's one thing I preach, which I beg many preachers to preach also. Forget this one of if you give, God will give back to you. If you give, I have seen many, Solomon was saying, who gave and gave and gave, and God didn't give them anything. I have seen those who didn't give to anybody. They became the richest men in the world. Warren Buffett was notorious for not releasing money. He was not a charity man. His principle was that you need to build wealth first. He did it until he became the richest man in the world. He didn't give anybody anything. It was after he had reached that peak that he now began to, he and his wife agreed that, well, if we die, this money should have been given out. So when his wife died, he started giving out money. And he said that he's not planning to give his children the disadvantage of being rich. He said it, Bill Gates said it. So, I mean, he's an old man. So the children, they're not children. They have been in their 50s, minimum. The youngest will probably be late 40s, 50s. So anything he wants to give them is not when you are dead. At the age of 80, you now be giving inheritance to a man who's 60. What is he going to do with it at that time? When he already has grandchildren. So whatever he wants to do for them, he has done. So one day he got up and gave out 85% of his total worth. That point, richest man in the world. And gave it out to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that they're going to use to solve problems in the world. But that's not the point. The point is that he became rich, did not observe these our principles, sow and reap. Didn't sow to nobody, he reaped everything. No, you know, Christians are very funny. They now start telling concocted wrong stories that Bill Gates' grandfather tithed. That's why. Listen to me, it's a lie. Why did he become the richest man in the world? Okay. All right. Who tithed for Aliko Dangote? Thank you. God bless you. I was even going to mention an American, but God bless you for telling me Aliko. Who tithed for him? Forget all of these things. They say, when you sow a seed, the generations after you will be rich. I've come to tell you today, it's a lie. Say, this is Pastor Banky. That's why they don't like you. But you came here. But I will teach you what Jesus is teaching. What your Solomon was telling us. Either love righteousness or don't love it. Make up your mind. Solomon was saying, the results that are touted for righteousness don't always come. That was what Solomon was saying. I have seen people do this righteousness, they didn't pay them. I have seen many people who did not do it. They got everything those who said they did righteousness were going to get. Under the sun. We're not talking about judgment in heaven. We're not talking about judgment after now. So what was he saying? This is a lesson for us Christians. Let's make up our minds. Whether we love righteousness or we don't. As a Christian, give because it is right to give. When we give because it is the right thing to do. We don't give because it promises anything. We give because it is the right thing to do. It is a sign of faith. It's a sign that we really trust the word of God. Many people that say, Jesus is Lord, gospel is the light of the nations. Amen. Everybody shout amen. All right, bring money. Let's go and preach in the Meduguri. You know, I'm building my house, you know. The house, when we finish, we'll think about it. Bring money. Let's go and preach it to the lost. You say it's a gospel. The gospel is the light of the nations, right? Bring your money. But they can't bring it. What does it mean? They don't believe what they are saying. Unbelievers who believe that if you give enough vaccines, we will wipe out polio. They are pouring money into it. Warren Buffett, most of the money he gave out, he expects Bill Gates to use it to solve health problems worldwide. Warren Buffett said it takes too much intelligence and dedication to give out money. He said, I don't have the time. I know how to make the money. I have found somebody who has the time and knows how to do it. So he took the money and gave to Bill Gates and his wife. So you guys know how to give out money. Please go and do it. He handed them almost everything he had. That they are the ones that know how to give out. I know how to make it. See, that's because Bill Gates and Co. believe that if you put enough money into research, you can solve any problem. So he gave malaria research $100 million and everybody almost collapsed. They had never seen that kind of money to research for malaria. He was surprised that you guys have never seen this amount of money. They said no. He said, no wonder the malaria has not been tackled. What am I saying? We put our money where our mouth is. Are you getting my point? That's what Christianity is about. It's not when you sow a seed, God will now multiply it. God does not do that. Stop that nonsense. If you want to give, give. If you don't want to give, take your money and go in peace. Don't give to church money that we tricked out of. You know, pastors will not go and hire. There are some mercenaries. Their job is going coming to come and get it out of your pocket by force. One day, one of my friends, I went to preach for him. I preached five powerful messages. I don't know, 5 minutes. He said, man of God, thank you for coming. He gave me 5,000 naira. My wife says, 1K per service. But that's not the gist. One man of God now came to town. His church, they gave the man 1 million naira. Maybe 4 services. Is it, how many services is that? About 4 services. 1 million. I was not joking. He was in another branch. I was joking with him. I said, man of God, I came to your church, preached 5 services. You gave me honorarium. Of course, I'm not preaching for money, but 5,000. He said, if you want money, you raise the money. I turned to him. I said, you're not serious. I said, I would never do that for you. I love my wife and I love your wife. That's what I told him. I said, I love my wife and I love your wife too. I don't want to make them widows. Yeah, that's what I told them. I told him that day. I said, you forget this joke. We may be laughing. Don't go near it again. I'll come to your church and raise money for what? The place where I have power, my alumni fellowship, I'm president. I will need money. I said, brethren, all of you are just there. Look at money in your pocket. Come on, go and bring money. Look, let's get it clear. Christians, the Bible says, for you have loved righteousness and hated wickedness. Therefore, God, even thy God, has anointed you with the oil of gladness above your fellows. That's what I'm talking about, the love of righteousness. The love of righteousness. Solomon was telling us, listen, all these stories we tell. This man was a great giver. He became a very rich man. Solomon said, I've seen those who gave more than him, and they became very poor men. And I've seen those who didn't give to anybody. They made it to the Forbes list, the top 10 richest men in the world. In his days, what is his name? Paul Getty. He was renowned for being stingy. That was his reputation. This guy is badly stingy. It was his reputation. His grandson was kidnapped. He did not pay the kidnappers. He said, what is the boy looking for in Italy? Yeah. They cut the boy's ear, sent to him. Don't try. And he became the richest man in the world. So this is your city. Did it work for him? No, read the story. The Italian mafia, they said, we'll kill this boy. But killing him, this man won't release money. So they said, we'll cut him in pieces. After too much pressure, media, everything, finally I agreed to release some money. When they asked him why, he said, if I release money, that's why they'll be kidnapping everybody. Do you know how many grandchildren I have? After that, he warned everybody. If they kidnap you, you're on your own. No, I'm not joking. Go and get material. Read these stories. The man said, if they kidnap you, after that boy, I warn all of you. Just because your grandfather is rich, just be disappearing to different parts of Europe. Come back home, sit in America where I can watch you. Yet, now what am I saying? We are not doing this, as Solomon was saying. There's no guarantee. He said, I have seen a rich man, sorry, I have seen a righteous man perish in his righteousness. And I've seen a wicked man prolong his life in wickedness. His own conclusion was that let's not be too righteous. Let's not be too wise. Let's not be too smart. That the word wise there is best understood if you say, let's not be too smart. He said, if you do that, you may ruin yourself. You don't give the customs man money. Look at what he does to you now. The policeman withholds your goods from traveling because you don't. He said, that's what he was saying. But listen, it was not as if God was advocating it. He was giving the response of a natural man under such circumstances. So he was saying to us, that we said, this is our own lesson, believers. We take what David said, for you have loved righteousness and hated iniquity. Whatever you want to do, do it because that thing is right, not because of the reward it promises. Did you hear what I said?
Yes, sir.
That's what it means to love righteousness. Do it because it is what? It is right. not because of the reward it promises. Please, I must not forget to add this one to it. Husband and wife, the same thing. Husbands, love your wives. Wives, honor, be subject to, respect your husband. It's there. Some people now say that if you want something for your husband, you will do this for him. That is iniquity in itself. It's iniquity. If you want to do something, make sure you do what is right because it is right. Even if he does not appreciate it. I remember once when I was a house officer, I was with the nurses one day, we were just talking, and one of the women now said that, I need that from my husband. Hey, the rest of them said, some men serve. And when the woman says some men, there's only one some men in her life. You know who the some men are. You get to my point. I remember that woman that day. She did her face like this. They will not even see it. Some they will not think they can step on your head. They will not think they were, no, they were tall. I just looking at them. I told the madam who said it, madam, please don't mind your colleagues. Because she goes to a church, at least then, this was years ago. They were going to one particular church where that's where they were training in the church. And she said, oh, look, that's what, and she was saying the matter of fact, why not? I can need that for my, I need that for my husband regularly. Many of those people that are shouting, if they now teach them one day in church, that's how to get this, that's how to get that, they'll start doing it. And that is the iniquity of what we're talking about. Solomon said, I've seen many women kneel. They didn't get love. I've seen some people, they know they kneel down for anybody. Yet the husband loves them to pieces. What am I teaching? For we have loved righteousness and hated iniquity. That's what we are talking about. We believers, we don't do righteously because of what it promises. All right, the Lord is good. See, talking about that wisdom matter, Solomon said in verse 19, wisdom strengthens a wise man more than 10 rulers who are in a city. 10 rulers, talking about 10 kings. Their kings are usually warriors. That is, wisdom is more important. Of course, we know wisdom and knowledge are important and are related. He said, indeed, there is not a righteous man on earth who continually does good and who never sins. Also, do not take seriously all words which are spoken, so that you will not hear your servant cursing you. And for you also have realized that you likewise have many times cursed others. Again, these are observations of life. He was saying, in effect here, no matter how right, the word right here, a righteous here, he's talking about a man who believes in doing what is right all the time. So no matter how the person is dedicated to doing what is right, there will be a day he will make a mistake. That's what he was saying. And I said, for that reason, it is not everything they say in your hearing that you pay attention to. That's what it was. That's essentially what he was saying. Okay? That's one thing I wish somebody would tell Donald Trump. All right? He responds to too many things. He shouldn't respond to that many things. He said, even your servant, one day, you will hear him saying words that are not complimentary. You will hear the man cursing you. So he said, when you hear it, just assume that it's one of the bad days for a righteous man. That's what Solomon was saying, okay? So even yourself, that say, you are forming Mr. Right. Yourself, you've done all of these things before. I think those things are fairly self-explanatory. He said, all of these, how did I find them out? Verse 23. I tested all of them with wisdom. I said, I will be wise, that is, I will have understanding. But I did not fully grasp everything. That's what it's saying in verse 23. But it was far from me. He said, what has been is remote and exceedingly mysterious. Who can discover it? Essentially, Solomon was saying, life is complicated. No matter what you know, there's so much more you do not yet know about life. That's simple. That's what he was just saying, in effect, there. He said, I directed my mind to know, to investigate, and to seek wisdom and an explanation, and to know the evil of folly and the foolishness of madness. This guy chooses some very strong words anyway. In it, after checking everything, I found out that the worst things you find in life are in your relationships. In verse 26, it says, and I discovered more bitter than death, the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are chains. One who is pleasing to God will escape from her, but the sinner will be captured by her. Now, this is very profound. This is very deep. Let me see what I can say about it briefly. Now, what was Solomon saying? This is my understanding of it. He said, I tested all of these things with wisdom. I decided to explore what life is about and how life works. That's what it means. I'm looking for wisdom. Having tried to explain life, I found out that it was very difficult. Why? Because the time came, I gained good understanding. I had a good grasp of everything. Yet, a woman seduced me and I behaved like a fool. I don't know whether you get my point. Did you catch that? Let me go by it again. I researched all of these things. I became very wise. But the day I realized that I was not as wise as I thought was when I found out that no matter how wise you are, a woman can seduce you. Is her hands, her heart, whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are chains. Now, please, let me just stop it there because there's a reason why. If you look at it, there has to be a connection in the flow of thought, of thoughts there, on the flow of the talk. That is, he was talking about wisdom. Suddenly, they just veered off. In fact, the first time I read this, I said this should be in brackets. But I looked at it again. No, it's not in brackets. Solomon was just saying something here. Because if you see the verses before, he said, no matter how wise you are, he said, I tested all of this with wisdom, verse 23. I said I will be wise. And we've seen that wisdom there refers to having knowledge, having understanding, able to connect the things of life, knowing what produces what. He said, but I discovered that it was far from me. He said, I discovered that the thing is remote and exceedingly mysterious. Who can understand it? I directed my mind to know, to investigate and seek wisdom, and to know the evil in folly and the foolishness of madness. I researched everything top to bottom. What did I discover? I discovered there's a problem here. That a woman with terrible heart and terrible hands can easily ensnare me, even though I have all the wisdom. That was how he came to the conclusion that this wisdom is hard to understand. Solomon was not here trying to teach about marriage, primarily, or about relationships. He was trying to explain to us that no matter how wise you think you are, a wrong person in your life can subvert all the wisdom that's with you. And he now said, one who is pleasing to God will escape, but the sinner will be captured. What was he saying? Your wisdom cannot preserve your life. Do you follow that point?
Yes.
Know everything you know. Be as strong as you want to be. Samson, as an example, he had the physical strength. Some people have the mental strength. Some have the financial strength. Some have the wisdom strength. They have all kinds of strengths. Now, Samson, as an example of a strong man, you saw what happened to him. What happened was that he encountered a woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are chains. And that one destroyed him, even though he had all the strength. What he's saying is that no matter the wisdom you have, you are not safe. That's the summary. And you see how, don't forget, he was building up to something. He lifted wisdom to a high level and showed you the Achilles heel of wisdom. A woman, a seducer, somebody who comes to seduce you out of the way of God. So he said, in effect, no matter what wisdom you are going for, know that except God is pleasing with you, a small thing will trip you over. A man can be wise. He knows investment. He's had MBA from Harvard, MBA from Princeton, MBA from Yale, MBA from Lagos Business School, Esut Business School. He has all the MBAs. He has all the connections. I forgot to mention, he's on the board of PDP. They come from PDP, went to the board of APC. Currently, he's in the... He knows everybody. And he has amassed over the years doing business, using connections here and there. He has amassed a lot of wealth. He said one little investment, because he listened to somebody he trusted, can ruin everything for him. Do you get the point? That there is no defense in his connections. There's no defense in his experience. There's no defense in his money. And there is definitely no defense in all the degrees that he has gathered. Please, that was what Solomon was saying. However, having said that, because this was one of the things that helped me when it came to as a single man, people say, how do you choose a right wife? I said, it's simple. The Bible says, he that is pleasing to God. It is not the methods you know for choosing a wife. It is whether you are pleasing to God or you are not pleasing. And the same thing applies to women also. is whether you are pleasing to God. And Solomon said, in effect, despite the failing of wisdom, if you are pleasing to God, you will escape from the traps of life. Life has traps. That's what he was saying. Life has traps. In this point, he was using a woman. If you read the other Proverbs of Solomon, you will discover that Solomon often uses woman, do you understand? Not only for the physical woman, but for as a sign of something that can tempt you. So he'll tell you about an adulteress. The adulteress could be, if I tell you this, you're going to laugh. It can be a visa. America will give you immigrant visa and win and drive you away from your destiny. Some people, the connection they have, their uncle is powerful. They were starting a small business. God had a plan for that business. He was planning to drive it to a high place where he would be the type of person that government consults when they want to make policies. Then one day, an uncle will come and say, what are you here struggling? I have connection in Abuja now. The next time they want to do, where's the one that was killing everybody that time? Immigration, right? Yeah, immigration wants to employ people. He helps him get a job in immigration. And that's the end of him. You never find out he's comfortable now. Life has traps. It has traps. Please go and read my book again. Don't quit the army, but Beyond Gifts and Talents. All right? Beyond Gifts and Talents. Please go and read that book. I explained it. But Solomon was telling us here, life has traps. No matter how wise you are, you can fall into the trap. You can fall in. Some of those traps are good looking. A woman whose hands, the woman is talking about here. And Solomon knew much about these things. No, when he used the word woman, he was saying that something can attract you. An attractive thing. Something that's supposed to give you pleasure, make you happy, help you. That's why I gave the example. Your uncle gets you a job, you are desperate, and you get out of it. Meanwhile, all the wisdom you had that God had given you for building that business to a high level, you could have used it, but a snare took you away. You get a good job. Don't forget it. You rise high in the civil service. And you maybe one day you can take good care of yourself, your wife, your children, and everybody, you're happy. But God said, that's it. That's the end of it. That ministry, in quotes, is closed. That ministry is over. Life has traps. That's what Solomon was saying. And again, this is an observation. Believe me, I have personally observed many people. See this going abroad thing? There are those that are going abroad and you start crying. One brother came. Vibrant man of God. One day I saw him say, he wants me to know that he and his wife and children have gone abroad, that he's joining them. Later, I wanted to invite him for a program. Somebody said, please, don't invite him. We don't understand what he's up to these days. And in my mind, I said, my God. What is it? North America has finished his anointing. Life has traps. You think you have sense? It trips you over. And the thing that trips people over in life are the things that are attractive, that promise them help and pleasure. That's why Solomon said it like this. The heart of this woman is snares and nets, and the hands are chains. As I'm talking, I'm persuaded he was not referring to a literal woman. He was just saying that the traps of life, no matter the wisdom you have, only God can deliver you from it. There is no wisdom. You can't teach to people. When you see this, you see this, you see that, you know this is this. He said, forget it, my guy. I have seen all kinds of things. I have amassed wisdom. Life is too complicated for you to structure into how. That's why you read Paul. New Testament, read Paul. Paul did two things. One, magnified Christ. Two, told Christians how to live in a manner worthy of the Lord. That's all. Those are the two things you see Paul doing in the New Testament. One, magnify Christ. Two, teach Christians how to live in a manner worthy of the Lord. That's all. After that, God adds everything to us. That is one greatest, that's one of the greatest lessons I've learned in life. If you think you understand life, God has to prove to you. You know the one we're talking about? Oh, Israel, it was me and you. And Yinkan were coming from Makurdi on Sunday. That road, we're just looking at the other a few years ago. We say, this area will open up. People went to buy land, say it to appreciate. You know what I'm talking about? Those of you who are into such things. You know what happened to the land there? It didn't appreciate nothing. Even me, talking to you, I advise people to do it. Thank God I did not listen to myself. And it's not as if I did not listen to myself. Just I didn't have time. You know, God has always been kind to me. I tell people, I don't know, what is not my business, my eye is not hurting, neither is my heart proud. I don't involve myself in matters too difficult for me. Something is too difficult, I kind of keep away. But people say, diarrhea. I give all kinds of stories out. If you see, early message is growing. If you just have land around there, Enugu just turned. Phew, and faced Itugu. Did you notice it? Drive from here to Itugu. Estates on the left and the right, growing every day. All the land you bought on that side, Yinkana told me that. Yinkana, what did you tell me that day? Say, you know somebody who's been trying to sell land for how many years now? Nobody the price. When you hear the price, it's exactly, it's less than one quarter of the one that's going on this other side. Nobody's pricing it. So all the wisdom, life has what?
Traps.
You will say, if you invest in this, I told you the other day, there was a time that Motorola was the leading, the way you talk about Apple, okay, Motorola was the Apple of America. They were the leading mobile phone manufacturer. Without their Motorola Razr, the way Americans carry iPhone now, that's how they were using the Razr. Then you went to the US, everybody carried a Razr. Motorola Razr. Years before that, Motorola decided that, listen, let us, the leading phone companies in the world were Nokia, next was Motorola. Nokia was one, Motorola was next. Now that is Apple and Samsung. It was Nokia and Motorola. Motorola now woke up one day and said, let's do something. Let's make it possible to make phone calls from anywhere in the world, whether there's network coverage or not. So they invested and sent, I think, about 16 or 20-something satellites into orbit and developed what they call the Iridium. Iridium was one massive contraption like this, but the antenna was fat. Be like very, very thick. But you could make your call from anywhere, from the center of the Pacific Ocean, you could make your call. They did not get, how many subscribers? I don't think they got up to 1 million subscribers worldwide. No, not up to that. The calls were criminally expensive. But what happened to Motorola? With all the wisdom, life has traps. GSM was rolling out at that time. So as GSM was growing, Motorola Iridium was dying. So next thing that it was so easy to start GSM. Literally, you could put a GSM mast on the back of a truck, park it somewhere, there's GSM coverage. Literally, people were doing it. Connect with satellites. Next thing that, look, with all their wisdom, they wasted billions of dollars. General Motors did it also. So too much wahala with unions. They tried to automate. With all the investment, everything collapsed. Now, I don't blame anybody. You should have known. You couldn't have known. Life has what?
Traps.
And Solomon said, in effect, when it comes to traps of life, in all my wisdom, I found out that there is no way out. It's only if God is pleased with you. That is when you will escape the traps of life. The beautiful things. There are people that will get visas and it will be the trap of their life. The people who will get jobs is the trap of their life. They will have investments, the trap of their life. Apostle, they will promote them in church, is the trap of their life. People will become, they will make them pastor. Go and head this branch. That's it, their life is over. The guy's life is over. So whatever all of this, how do you avoid it? Say, there's nothing you can do. It's only God that will help you what? Escape it. I hope you've gotten that point.
Yes.
Let's just read this so we can finish. No, we'll finish chapter 7. He said, behold, I have discovered this, says the preacher. Adding one thing to another to find an explanation, which I am still seeking and have not found. I have found one man among 1,000, but I have not found a woman among all of these. He said, behold, I have found only this, that God made men upright, but they have sought out many devices. Why did he say that he found one man amongst 1,000, but he didn't find any woman amongst all of these? Let me just add one explanation. I'm not saying that is the correct thing, but at least something to think about. I found out that men are very scarce. Real men with understanding, men you can trust. But women are even more difficult to find. That's what he was saying. That's the only thing I can put in there. That in life, to find people that you can relate with and talk wisdom, people you can rely upon, to have understanding about life, to help you navigate through life, they are very difficult to find. So what they were just saying in effect is that very difficult to find a man, even more difficult to find a woman to do that for you. He said, but behold, one thing I have found out. Why are they so difficult to find? God made them upright, actually. but they sought out many devices. What does that tell you? It's those things that we are pursuing in our lives that are not the core of God's call for us that makes us go wrong, or that make us go wrong, those things. That is, Solomon was saying, in effect, if only, in fact, I just have to jump ahead. If only we will follow God, obey his commandments, we discover that things were designed to work normally. Are you getting my point? Let me explain that and I'll close with it. Solomon was saying that, listen, you don't need 10 keys on how to prosper. Just stop chasing things that God did not say you should chase. You don't need 50 keys on how to find a good wife. Just live a righteous and holy life and make your request of God, and a good wife will be dropped on your doorstep. They just say, come. Oh boy, wear that suit. Come, follow us. Where are we going? We have done the bounds of marriage. Just come and stand here. Just say yes when they ask you, do you? It sounds funny, but you know, we have seen things like that, both in the Bible and in real life. I told you, I have a friend in this city. He never met his wife until he had married her. Modern day technology, and what I'm learning is that this is modern day occurrence, not those days. Say he never met his wife until he had married her. They had gone home, paid the bride price, everything, fixed everything complete. The first day he saw her, he waited for her at an airport. Then he was abroad, was a missionary. And then she arrived, he went to wait for her at the airport. And he saw her approach. That was the first day he was seeing a woman he had already married. You think it's an Indian story? It's not an Indian story. This is Nigeria. They had paid the bride price. And how did they get the wife? One day he was doing mission work abroad. His friend from Enugu called him and said, man of God, how are you doing? I'm fine. He said, what is happening in that area? You know, any woman in the horizon? He said, no, nothing. No, we're just minding the things of the kingdom. He said, in that case, I have a wife for you. That's what his friend told him. I have a wife for you. This is a girl you should marry. And they talked. He trusted the guy's judgment. He gave one or two signs, requests from the Lord, and the Lord confirmed those things through signs and different things. And he said they should go ahead. And the wife agreed, and they went to their house. Families met, paid bride price. The guy didn't even come. They started planning wedding. If a part of the planning of the wedding was why she now traveled abroad, buy some things, and even see the man. So, okay, are you the one I'm supposed to marry? Say yes. So it was one that went to pick her from the airport the day she arrived there. Okay, let me go and pick this woman arriving. So it was while waiting, just look, okay, that must be her. Hello, are you Susan and so person? Yes, I'm the one. Ah, you're welcome. By that time, they were already married, traditionally. The one in the Bible, Joseph. Joseph got a job. And Pharaoh said, yeah, you have been in prison for a while. I said, yes. When did you enter prison? I was only somewhere maybe 24 when they locked me up. So you were not married before then. Okay, I was a slave. Ah, okay. So you don't have a wife? No. And you want to work for me? Are you all right? Just looked around. Potiphar! Yes, my lord. I get her, followed you to the palace the other day. What's she doing now? She just finished school, sir. Good. Go and bring her. Joseph, say I do. Joseph said I do. You can start work. Nothing more than that, though. Joseph don't get wife. Life is not about 50 keys to prosperity. It's like God has made men upright, but they sought out many devices. What, like I said, what Paul was saying, just teaching us how to walk in a manner worthy of him. And we'll walk into the destiny he has prepared for our lives. Let's bow down our heads and give the Lord thanks. Say, Lord, thank you for understanding that has come to me again today. Just give him thanks for that. Say, Lord, thank you for understanding. See, the entrance of your word, it gives light. Thank you. You have given me understanding. Just thank him for that. Just take another prayer point. Just say, Lord, I forsake every device and I follow uprightness. He said, God has made men upright, just that they followed after many devices. So pray that prayer. Say, Lord, I forsake many devices, every other device, and I pursue after uprightness. I know you will add everything to me. Say, Lord, I know you will add everything to me. You will add everything to me. Say, the righteousness, David said, of thy testimonies is everlasting. Give me understanding and I shall live. That's the prayer point. Say, Lord, give me understanding of uprightness. What to do? I love righteousness. and I hate wickedness. Declare that with your mouth. Say, Lord, I love righteousness and I hate wickedness. That's all. You are not talking about the reward of righteousness now. It's the love of righteousness. That's Christianity. Say, Lord, I love righteousness and I hate wickedness. Declare with your mouth this evening that you love righteousness and you hate wickedness. I hate iniquity. I do righteousness for the sake of righteousness. I do righteousness because it is pleasing to you. I love righteousness. I love righteousness. Say, Lord, I thank you for the anointing that you are pouring upon my head. Thank you for the anointing that's coming upon my head for the love of righteousness. I'm not focusing on the gains of righteousness. Men may die in their righteousness, but I'll still follow righteousness. Jesus followed righteousness to the cross. I will still follow righteousness. Thank you. In the name of Jesus, we have prayed.